Terry Quinn was behind a display case sitting beside the register reading a book when he heard a car door slam. A middle-aged black guy was locking the door of his white Chevy. Then he was crossing Bonifit on foot and heading toward the shop. The car looked exactly like a police vehicle, and the gray-haired, gray-bearded black guy looked like a plainclothes cop. He wore a black turtleneck under a black leather with loose-fitting blue jeans and black oilskin work boots. The guy had called, said he was working in a private capacity for Chris Wilson's mother, asked if Quinn would mind giving him an hour or so of his time. Quinn had appreciated the direct way he had asked the question, and he'd liked the seasoning in the man's voice. Quinn said, "Sure, come on by." The chime sounded over the door as the guy entered the shop. Just under 6 foot, 190, guessed Quinn. If this was the guy who had phoned, his name was Derek Strange.
"Derek Strange."
Quinn got out of his chair and took the man's outstretched hand.
"Terry Quinn."
Strange was looking down slightly on the young white man with the longish brown hair. 5'9", 5'9 and a half, 165 pounds, medium build, green eyes, a spray of pale freckles across the bridge of his thick nose.
"Thanks for agreeing to see me."
Strange drew his wallet, flipped it open, and showed Quinn his license.
"No problem."
Quinn didn't glance at the license as a gesture of trust. Also, he wanted to let Strange know that he was calm and had nothing to hide.
"How did you find me here?"
"Your place of residence is listed in the phone book. From there, I talked to your landlord. The credit check on your apartment application has your place of employment."
"My landlord's supposed to be giving that out?"
$20 bill involved. Supposed to, got nothing to do with it.
"You know, you get your hands on the transcripts of my testimony, you'll be saving yourself a whole lot of time. And maybe a few 20s, too."
"I'm going to do that. And I already read everything that's been written about the case in the press, but it never hurts to go over it again."
"You said you were working for Chris Wilson's mother?"
"Right. Leona Wilson is retaining my services."
"You think you're going to find something the review board overlooked?"
"This isn't about finding you guilty of anything you've already been cleared on. I'm satisfied, reading over the material, that this was just one of those accidents bound to happen. You got two men bearing firearms, mix it up with alcohol on one side, emotion and circumstance, preconceptions on the other."
"Preconceptions? You mean racism," thought Quinn. "Why don't you just say what you mean?"
"Yeah, you know, preconceptions. You mix all those things together, you got a recipe for disaster." Quinn nodded slowly, his eyes narrowing slightly as he studied Strange. Strange cleared his throat. "So it's more about exonerating Wilson than anything else. Wiping out the shadow that got thrown across his name, what with everything got written and broadcast about the case."
"I didn't have anything to do with that. I never talked to the press."
"I know it."
"Even his own mother should be able to see that."
Quinn spoke quietly, in a slow, gravelly way, stretching his vowels all the way out. Out-of-towners would guess that Quinn was from somewhere south of Virginia. Washingtonians, like Strange, knew the accent to be all D.C.
"Have you spoken with his mother?" asked Strange. "I tried."
"She's single-minded. Probably didn't make it too easy on you."
"No, but I can understand it."
"Gush again."
"Because I'm the guy who killed her son.
Maybe we can just clear things up a little, okay?"
"There's nothing I'd like more."
Quinn put the paperback he had been reading down on the glass top of the display case. Strange glanced at his cover. Beneath it, in the lucked case, lying on a piece of red velvet, he saw several old paperbacks. A Harlan Ellison with juvenile delinquent cover art, a Chester Himes, an Ironside novelization by Jim Thompson, and something called The Burglar by a cat named David Gudis.
"The owner of the shop. He into crime books?"
"She's into selling first editions. Paperback originals. It's not my thing. The collecting part. And also those types of books. Me, I like to read westerns."
"I can see that."
Strange nodded to Quinn's book.
"That one any good?"
"Valdez is coming. I'd say it's just about the best."
"I saw the movie. If I recall, it was a little disappointing. But it had Burt Lancaster in it, so I watched it through."
"You like westerns, huh?"
"I don't read the books, if that's what you mean. But I like the movies, yeah. And the music."
Strange shifted his weight. For a moment, he'd forgotten why he'd come.
Anyway, where did you want to talk?"
Strange looked over Quinn's shoulder. In the far right aisle, a thin man in a textured white shirt stood on a step stool and placed books high on a shelf.
"You work here?"
That's Lewis. Lewis! I was thinking, you had the time. Maybe Lewis could cover the shop and we could take a drive to a spot where it went down. It would help me to see it with you there. Quinn thought it over. He turned around and said,
Hey, Lewis!
Lewis stepped down off the stool and walked to the front of the store, pushing his black-framed glasses up on his nose. His eyes were hugely magnified behind the thick lenses of the glasses, and his hair was black, greasy, and knotted in several spots. Strange could smell the man's body odor as he arrived.
Lewis, say hello to Detective Strange.
Strange ignored Quinn's sarcastic tone and said, How you doing, Lewis?
Detective?
Lewis did not look at Strange. At least Strange didn't think he did. Lewis's eyes were as big as bocce balls, unfocused all over the shop.
Lewis, you don't mind. Me and Detective Strange are going to go out and take a ride. Sarita calls. You tell her I clocked out for a while. That okay by you?
Sure.
Nice meeting you, Lewis.
You too, Detective.
Quinn snagged his leather off a coat tree behind the counter. Strange and Quinn walked from the shop. Crossing the street, Strange said,
He blind?
Legally, he is. He says he ruined his eyes reading under the covers with a flashlight when he was a boy. Had a father who thought Lewis was unmanly or something because he read books.
Imagine him thinking that.
Well, Lewis is all right.
You're a friend to him. You ought to tell him about those products they got on the market called soap and shampoo. Got this revolutionary thing called deodorant, too.
I've told him. So has Sarita. But he's a good clerk. She doesn't like to work too many hours, and neither do I. He's the kind of guy his hours might as well be painted on this front door. Hard to find help like that today.
They got into Strange's caprice. Strange turned the ignition, and the engine came to life.
You're driving a cop's cruiser? What's this, a 90?
89. 350 square block with a beefed-up suspension. Thicker sway bars and a heavy-duty alternator.
Don't your tails get burned driving this thing?
Sometimes. When I'm doing a close tail, I take out a rental.
I thought you were a cop when you pulled up in front of the place. Not just the car, the way you moved.
Yeah. I got made as one by this old lady yesterday down in Langdon Park. Once you put on the badge, I guess you never lose a look.
You're telling me?
Yeah, said Strange. I was a cop, and then I wasn't, just like you.
How long ago was that?
Been about 30 years since I wore a uniform. 1968.
Strange pulled down on the tree and put the Chevy in gear.
They drove down on Georgia Avenue, music playing from the deck. Just past Kansas Avenue, Strange pointed out his shop, set back off the main drag in the middle of a narrow strip.
That's me right there.
Nice logo.
Yeah, I like it.
You sell magnifying glasses, too?
Investigations, man. Little kid sees that symbol, he knows what it means.
Hell, your boy Lewis sees it. He squints real good, he can tell.
I got you.
Strange turned up the volume on the deck and sang under his breath.
We both know that is wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now.
I heard this one, said Quinn. Guy's hammering some married lady, right?
It's a little more subtle than that. Mr. Billy Paul, he justified an entire career with this single right here. Glad I recorded it before I lost my album collection. Had to throw them all out after the pipes bursted in my house a couple of years back.
You can buy it on CD, I bet.
I have a player, but I like records. Was listening to this Blackbirds tape yesterday. Blind Start? Thinking about the liner notes on the inner sleeve of the original record. Oof. I sure wish I had that record today.
Strange smiled a little, listening to the music.
Strange looked across the bench.
You're a D.C. boy, right?
Silver Spring.
I heard it in your voice.
Graduate of the old Blair High School. You?
Roosevelt High. Grew up in this neighborhood right here. Still live in it.
Quinn looked at the blur of beer markets, liquor stores, dollar shops, barbers, dry cleaners, and chicken and Chinese grease pits as they drove south.
My grandparents live down this way, said Quinn. We come to see them every Sunday after Mass, 13th and Crittenden.
That's around a block from where I live.
I used to play out in their alley. It always seems, I don't know,
dark down there.
Because of all those dog people, thought Strange.
That's because you was off your turf.
Yeah. It made me a little bit afraid. Afraid and excited at the same time, you know what I mean?
Sure.
One day, these kids came up on me while I was playing by myself.
Black kids, right?
Yeah. Why you ask that?
Just trying to get a picture in my mind.
So these kids come along, and the littlest one of them picked a fight with me. He was shorter than I was, and lighter, too.
It's always the littlest ones want to fight when he's in the group. Little dude got the most to prove. You fight him?
Yeah. I had walked away from a fight at my elementary school earlier that year, and I'd never forgiven myself for it. Matter of fact, I still can't bear to think of it today.
Funny, huh?
Not really.
This kid in the alley, you beat him?
I lost. I got in a punch or two, which surprised him. But he knew how to fight, and I didn't, and he put me down. I got back inside the house. I was shaking, but proud, too, because I didn't back down. And I saw that kid a couple of years later, the day of my grandfather's wake. He was walking by their house and stopped to talk to me. Asked me if I wanted to play some football down by the school playground.
And you learned?
What breeds respect? Not to walk away from a fight. Take a beating if you have to, but a beating's never as bad as the feeling of shame you get when you back off.
That's your youth talking right there. One day you're going to learn it's all right to walk away.
Down past Howard University at the Florida Avenue intersection, Georgia Avenue became 7th Street. They stayed on 7th, and then they were in Chinatown, passing nightclubs, sports bars, and the MCI Center, which anchored the new downtown D.C. Farther along, there were more nightclubs and restaurants, and a short strip of the Arts and Gallery District. And at Quinn's direction, Strange hung a left onto D Street, 2 blocks north of Pennsylvania Avenue. He parked the Chevy in a no-parking zone along a yellow-painted curb and killed the engine. Then he reached into a glove box, withdrew his voice-activated tape recorder, and placed the recorder on the seat between himself and Quinn.
"This is it," said Strange. "You were right about here?"
"Except we parked it in the middle of the street. We came in just like this from 7th. My partner was driving the cruiser."
"That would be Eugene Franklin."
"Gene Franklin, right."
"What made y'all pull over?"
"We were working. We had just come off a routine traffic stop. Guy in a Maxima had blown a red up at Mount Vernon Square. Up around 7th and then..."
"You want the exact location?" "So you were headed south on 7th after that, and Franklin turned left onto D. What did you see?"
Quinn squinted. "We came up on a confrontation. A curbed red Jeep, a Wrangler, parked behind a shitbox Toyota. Next to the Toyota on the street, a guy with his knee on another guy's chest, pinning him to the asphalt. In the aggressor's hand, a pistol, an automatic, and he had the muzzle smashed up against the pinned guy's face."
"Describe the aggressor."
"Black, mid to late 20s, medium build, street clothes."
"And the guy he had on the ground?"
"White."
Quinn looked over at Strange, then away.
"Around 30, street clothes, slight build."
"So you and your partner, you happen on the scene of this confrontation. What happens then?" Quinn breathed out slowly.
"Gene says, 'Look,' but I'm ahead of him. I already got the mic in my hand. I've got a key, and I'm calling for backup while Gene flips on the overheads and gives the horn a blast. The aggressor looks up at the whoop of the siren, and Gene stops the cruiser in the middle of the street. But our presence doesn't change the aggressor's mind."
"You got a talent for reading minds."
"I'll put it another way. The aggressor keeps the gun on the guy he's got pinned to the ground. He's made us his cops, but it hasn't changed his focus. From my perspective, it hasn't changed his intent."
"Where are you now? You and your partner, I mean."
"We're about 25 yards back from them, I'd say."
"Okay."
Quinn rubbed his thumb over his lower lip.
"I'm out of the car right away, and I can hear Gene's door swing open as I draw my weapon. So I know he's behind the driver's side door, and I know Gene's got his own weapon cleared from his holster as well."
"You do what next?"
"I've got my gun on the aggressor. I yell for him to drop his weapon and lie face down on the street. He yells something back. I can't really hear what he's saying because Eugene's yelling over him, telling him what I'm telling him, to drop his weapon. The lights, the red and blue lights from the overheads, are strobing the scene, and I can hear the crackle of our radio coming from the open doors of our cruiser behind us."
"Sounds like a lot of confusion."
"Yes. Gene and I are both yelling now. And there's the lights, and the radio, and the aggressor. He's yelling back at us, not moving the gun from the guy's face."
"What's Wilson? What's the aggressor yelling now?"
"His name. His name and a number.
It didn't register. It didn't register until later on that the number he was yelling, it was his bad number. But he never moved his gun away from the guy's face. Not until he looked at us, I mean.
Strange stared through the windshield, trying to imagine the picture the young man was painting. What happened when he looked at you, Gwen?
It was only for a moment. He looked at me, and then at Jean, and something bad crossed his face. I'll never forget it. He was angry at us, at me and Jean. He was more than angry. His face changed to the face of a killer. He swung his gun in our direction, then...
He pointed his gun at you?
Not directly. He was swinging it, like I say. The muzzle of it swept across me, and he had this look on his face. There wasn't any doubt in my mind. I knew. I knew he was going to pull the trigger. Eugene screamed my name, and I fired my weapon.
How many times?
I fired 3 rounds.
From where you stood?
They say I walked forward as I fired. That I don't remember.
According to the articles, the trajectory of the entrance wounds and the exit pattern of the shell casings for that particular weapon were consistent with your statement. But the 3 casings weren't found together in a group. Apparently, you moved forward and fired the 3rd round into him when he was down. The 3rd casing was found about 10 feet from the victim.
I don't remember moving forward. Look, I know what they said and I know about the casings, but I don't remember. And I don't believe I shot him when he was down. He might have been going down, still pointing his gun.
Weren't you concerned about hitting the other guy?
At that point, I was concerned primarily with the safety of myself and my partner. I've already admitted as much.
Gwen glared at Strange.
Anything else?
Okay, Gwen. Take a deep breath and settle down.
Strange beeper sounded. He took it from his hip and checked the readout. He said, "Excuse me, ma'am." Reaching across Quinn to unlock the glove box and withdraw his cellular phone. He punched a number into the grid and spoke into the mouthpiece.
"What's up, Bron?"
"Uh-huh."
Strange frowned.
"Believe me, it's no thing. I got no problem with it, Ron. I sound like I do? Give me the data, man."
Strange took the information, using a pen on a cord, writing on a pad affixed to the dash. He cut the line without another word and dropped the phone in the glove box, shutting the door a little too hard.
"I got something I gotta do. Man jumped bail on the B&E beef. And there's this snitch we use. Been hanging in a bar this man's supposed to frequent. Turns out the bail jumper just walked into the bar."
"Who was that on the phone?"
"My operative. Young man by the name of Ron Lattimore works for me."
"You do skip tracing too?"
"Ron handles that. I don't like to chase people down, but Ron's busy, see, picking up a suit. So this one goes to me. Shouldn't be too serious. I seen the sheet on this guy, and he's all of 120 of these a pound. It's out of my way, but if you want, I'll drop you off."
"I'll ride with you. You can drop me when you're done."
"Suit yourself."
"Hold up a second." Quinn put his hand on Strange's arm. "Don't think I didn't notice what you were getting at with your questions there. All that black aggressor, white guy, black this, white that bullshit. What happened that night, you can try and paint it any way you want if it makes you feel any better. But it had nothing to do with race."
"Don't tell me. Don't tell me because I'm a black man, 25 years your senior, and I know. I'm just trying to get at the truth. And if I hurt your feelings or hit a nerve somewhere along the line, so be it. I'm just doing my job."
Strange ignitioned the Caprice, engaged the trans, and swung a U in the middle of D.
"One more thing. Knock off that Quinn shit from here on in. Call me Terry, okay?"
Strange turned right on 7th and gave the Chevy gas. He reached for the sunglasses in his visor, chuckling under his breath.
"What's so funny?"
"You got a temper on you."
Quinn looked out of the window, letting his jaw relax. "People have told me that I do."
"That story about fighting in the alley? How you were shaken, afraid, and excited at the same time? You liked the action your whole life, didn't you?"
"I guess I did."
"What you ended up becoming, that's not surprising, a guy like you. I bet you always wanted to be a cop."
"That's right.
And that was a good one, too."
The bar was at the end of a strip of bars off M Street in Southeast, surrounded by fenced parking lots, auto repair and body shops, and patches of dead grass. Strange parked and nodded toward the corner business, a brick, 2-story windowless structure.
The sign over the door read, Toot Sweet, Live Girls.
Sign says they've got live girls in there, said Quinn.
That's sort of fellows who like dead ones don't get disappointed once they get inside. Should have known from the address Ryan gave me that it was going to be a titty bar. Wait out here, you want to.
I like to look at women.
Suit yourself. Strange replaced his sunglasses atop the visor. Let me do my job, though, and stay out of my way. Strange got some papers out of the trunk. As he turned, Quinn noticed the Leatherman, the buck knife, and the beeper all affixed in some way to Strange's waist.
You got purple tights that go with that utility belt?
Funny, said Strange. At the door of the club, Strange paid the cover and asked for a receipt. The doorman, a black guy who looked to Quinn like he had some Hawaiian or maybe Samoan in him, said,
We don't give receipts.
Go ahead. Create one for me.
Create one?
You know, use your imagination. We'll be over by the bar. They walked through the crowd. At first, Quinn pegged it as all black, but on closer inspection, he saw that it was a mix of African-Americans and other non-whites, dark-skinned Arabs and Pakis, taxi-driving types. The dancers, black and mixed race as well, were up on several stages around the club and stroking the steel floor-to-ceiling poles that were their props. Men stood around the stages, beer in one hand, dollar bills in the other, and there were men drinking at tables, talking and tipping the waitresses who would soon be dancing up on stage themselves, and there were other men with their heads down, sleeping, dead drunk. Strange and Quinn stepped up to the unkept bar, damped and strewn with wet bev naps and dirty ashtrays.
Filthy,
said Strange, taking a napkin off a stack and wiping his hands. Some of the black men down along the bar were looking at the two of them, not bothering to look away when Quinn eye-shot them back. Quinn knew it was unusual and suspect to see a black and white together in a place like this. To the men at the bar, they were either cops or friends, maybe even faggots. The bartender was approaching, and Strange said to Quinn,
You want a beer?
Too early for me, said Quinn.
Give me a ginger ale, said Strange to the bartender, who sputtered a damp toothpick behind his ear.
From the bottle. I'll have a Coke, same way.
Quinn turned and put his back against the bar. He found a dancer he could look at. He was studying her breasts, the color of them in their shape, and wondering if Juana's would look the same. He'd made out with black women, but he'd never had one in bed, not all the way. He was going to see Juana tonight, over at her place.
Your soda's up, said Strange.
Going to ruin your eyes like that, you stare too hard. Get like your boy Lewis, after wear those glasses like he does. Quinn turned back and faced the bar. He had a long swig from his glass. The sound system was pumping out a Prince tune from the 80s, and Quinn tapped his fingers on the glass. Strange looked over his shoulder again, did a double-take, and said,
There's my boy. Be back in a few.
Strange found his snitch back in the hall that led to the kitchen and bathrooms, and returned 10 minutes later. He told Quinn that the subject of his skip, Sherman Coles, had gone upstairs an hour earlier.
What's upstairs?
Private lap dances, shit like that.
I'll come with you. Don't worry, I'm not going to get in your way.
Look, I'm just checking out the situation. Might not be the right time or place to try and bring him in.
Understood.
Quinn picked up a piece of paper up off the bar and handed it to Strange.
What's that?
Your receipt?
Strange inspected it. A playing card showing a photograph of a bare-breasted woman on its back. Across her breast was written, In receipt of $7 cover charge for strip bar. Toot sweet.
Funny boy.
You told him to be creative.
They walked up a red-carpeted set of stairs. A guy was coming down, and he moved aside to let them pass, not looking them in the eye. Up on the second floor, the lamps were conical and dimmed, and smoke hung in their light. Another bar ran along the wall, and there were tables spread around the bulk of the room, some in darkness, some barely lit. At the tables, a few guys were getting lap danced by girls wearing G-strings, nothing else. Strange and Quinn had a seat at an empty deuce near the bar. Strange settled into his chair and patted the table in rhythm to the music.
This is more like it. Joy by Isaac Hayes.
I had the vinyl on this one, too. You could hear the champagne bubbles rising when you listened to the record on a nice box. But on a CD, sound quality just doesn't make it.
He pulled the Coles photograph from his jacket pocket along with the Coles papers he had taken from the file box in the trunk. Strange looked over Quinn's shoulder. He stood abruptly from his chair.
Excuse me for a minute while I do my job. Looks like I located Coles.
Need some company?
Been doing this for a long time. I think I'll just go ahead and handle it myself.
Strange was walking toward the table where Sherman Coles was sitting, and had gotten to within a few yards of it when another man emerged from out of the shadows. He was a very big man with wide shoulders and hard, chiseled features. Strange stopped walking just as the man flanked Coles. He could have averted his eyes, kept going past the table, but they had watched his approach all the way and would say something or stop him if he tried to dodge. He knew his shot at Coles was over for the day.
You looking for someone, man?
I was, said Strange, forcing a friendly smile. From across the room there, I thought you were this fellow I knew, from back in the neighborhood where I came up.
Oh, yeah?
You got to have 20 years on me, though. So how could we have come up together?
Strange shook his head.
We couldn't have, you're right. Now that I'm up close. The thing of it is, I can't see too good in this low light.
Coles took a sip from the snifter before him and tapped ash off his cigarette. He glanced over his shoulder to the man behind him and said,
You hear that, Richard?
A crescent scar semicircled Richard's left eye.
Man can't see too good in this light. Or maybe he thinks we can't see too good, said Coles. Because we did see you, sitting over there with your Caucasian partner, looking at whatever it is you put back in your pocket trying to make me.
Trying to make you as what?
Strange chuckled and spread his hands.
Brother, I told you I just mistook you from someone else. Oh, you mistook all right.
Coles smiled and dragged on his cigarette. Whatever you're thinking, said Strange, his voice steady.
You are wrong. Tell you what, I'll just go ahead and ask the white boy. Here he comes now.
Quinn knew Strange had warned him to stay off, and he considered this while he continued on. But then he was standing next to Strange thinking, I'm here.
I can't change that now.
He spread his stance close to the table, looked down on Sherman Coles, and affected his cop posture.
Here go your backup, said Coles. What you think, Richard? The salt and pepper team we got here, they cops?
Look more like the Orkin Army, said Richard.
What's with those jackets, huh?
Those y'all's uniforms.
Strange realized for the first time that he and Quinn were both wearing black leather. Now that Quinn had made the mistake of joining him, he was focusing on how the two of them were going to walk away. And then he began to think about Quinn's short fuse, and Strange thought, maybe he ought to stay.
I don't think they're cops, said Coles. White boy's too short to be a cop.
Look more like bounty hunters than me.
Kind of what I was thinking too, Richard.
Coles looked Strange.
That what you are, old man?
Like I said
Strange, keeping his voice on the amiable side.
I thought you were someone else. I made a mistake. Now why you want to lie?
Because he's scared, said Richard. He does look a little scared. White boy look like he about to dirty his drawers. How about it, white boy? That's so?
How about what? Said Quinn.
You gonna soil your laundry or you gonna walk away right now before you do?
What'd you say?
Was I stuttering?
Let's go, said Strange.
Don't you know? Said Richard, smiling at Quinn. White man just afraid of the black man? Not this white man.
Oh, ho, ho, ho. Now little man Tate gonna give us some of that fire in the belly stuff. That's what you gonna do now, bitch?
Strange tugged on Quinn's sleeve. Quinn held his ground and stared at Richard. Richard laughed.
We're leaving now.
When your bosses or whoever asks you why you came back empty-handed, tell them you ran into Sherman Coles and his kid brother. Tell them it was us who punked you out.
Strange nodded, the light draining from his eyes.
We told you our names, white boy,
said Richard, his gaze on Quinn.
Ain't you got one?
Strange pulled harder on Quinn's jacket.
Come on, man, let's go.
This time, Quinn complied. They walked down the stairs, the Coles brothers' laughter on Quinn's back like a stab of a knife. At the downstairs bar, Strange signaled the bartender for his unpaid tab and yelled out over the music for the tender to bring back a receipt. Strange turned to Quinn, who stood with his back against the bar looking out into the crowd.
Stupid man! What did I tell you about interfering with my shit?
I wasn't thinking. What do you do now? You ever gonna take him in?
Oh, I'll take him in. Didn't figure on Sammy Davis Jr. having a baby brother look like Dexter Manley. Look, I had the situation under control until you stepped in. Tried to get all Joe Kidd on their asses.
Yeah?
Said Quinn, watching Richard Coles come down the stairs and sidle up next to a waitress. Richard was bending forward to whisper in the girl's ear.
I gotta work on that, I guess.
Damn right you do,
said Strange, glancing back to see the subject of Quinn's attention. Strange saw Quinn watch Richard Coles as he headed off down the hall past the end of the bar.
Here you go, ma'am,
said Strange, paying the bartender taking his receipt.
You ready?
Said Strange to Quinn.
Gotta take a leak. I'll see you out at the car.
Right.
Quinn waited until he was gone and then headed down the hall. On his way out, Strange told the doorman he'd be right back. He walked quickly to his car and pulled a set of handcuffs and a sap from the trunk, sliding the sap into the breast pocket of his jacket, and went back into the club. He took the steps up to the second floor, two at a time, and moved through the table area to the foretop where Sherman Coles still sat. Coles' eyes widened, watching Strange moving in his direction, purpose in his step. Coles' neck jerked, bird-like as he looked around the bar searching frantically for a familiar face.
Right here, Sherman,
said Strange, and he kicked the table into Coles, sending him on the floor in a shower of drink and live ashes. Strange got Coles up on his feet, turned him around, and yanked his arms up, forcing Coles to his knees. Strange put his own knee in Coles' back while he cuffed him, and then he pulled Coles to his feet. Strange drew his wallet, flipped it open, and showed his license to the room in general.
Investigator! Don't no one interfere and everything's gonna be all right.
He did this in situations like this one, and nearly every time it worked. It wasn't a lie, and to most people, investigator meant cop. Strange kept his wallet open, holding it out for all to see as he pushed Coles along toward the stairs.
Where my brother at, man?
The white man I was with? He's talking to him, I expect.
Richard to kill him.
Keep walking, man.
Knew you'd be back,
mumbled Coles.
You had that look in your eye.
Yeah, but you didn't know I'd be back so soon.
Quinn walked down the hall, shakily singing along under his breath to another Prince tune that was playing now in the main portion of the club. There were small speakers hung in the hall, but their sound was trebly, not bass-heavy like out near the stages, and this thin, shrill tone made his blood jump, as did the thought of what he was about to do. Quinn went straight back to the end of the hall, pushed on a swinging door, and went through the frame into a fluorescent-lit dirty kitchen.
Amigo,
said Quinn to a small Salvadorian with a thin mustache, wearing a stained white apron, leaning against a prep table near the back of the kitchen, and smoking a cigarette. The man said nothing, and his eyes said nothing. The kitchen radio blared in the room. Quinn scanned the kitchen quickly and went to where a steel tenderizing mallet lay atop an industrial microwave oven. He picked up the mallet and measured its weight in his hand. The man still said nothing as Quinn walked out of the kitchen. Now he was back in the hall and walking toward the men's room. Now he was pushing on the men's room door, walking through it, and into the men's room looking at Richard Coles take a piss at one of the stand-up urinals against the wall. Quinn kept moving. He said,
Hey, Richard!
And when Richard Coles turned his head to the side, Quinn swung the mallet fast and hard and connected its rigid surface to the bridge of Richard's nose. Richard's nose shifted to the right, and blood sprayed off in the same direction. A stream of urine swung out and splashed at Quinn's feet. Richard's legs gave out from under him, and Quinn kicked him in the groin as he hit the tiles. He kicked him in the cheekbone, and blood splattered onto the porcelain face of the urinal. Quinn's hands were shaking. He waited for the rise and fall of Richard's chest. He said, Terry Quinn, and he dropped the mallet on the floor. Out in the bar, there was a buzz, a sense that something had gone down. Men moved out of Quinn's path as he walked through the club. He felt the power, and it was a familiar feeling, though he hadn't felt it for a while. It was like he was wearing the uniform again, and he knew now that this was what he had been missing for a long time. He felt good. Quinn got into the passenger side of Strange's car and looked over the lip of the bench. Sherman Coles was stretched out and cuffed, lying on the back seat. Strange nodded at the blood on Quinn's boots.
You all right?
Yeah.
Where my brother at?
Said Sherman from the back seat. Neither Quinn nor Strange answered Coles.
How'd you know I'd walk out of there?
I didn't know. What I did know, you gave me enough time.
Where's my brother?
You always go for the light work?
When I can. Strange ignitioned the Chevy. I gotta get little Sherman over to Fifth Street, process the paperwork. I know you don't want to stick around for that.
Drop me at the first metro station you see. I need to get home. I'm seeing a lady tonight.
Strange pulled off the curve and drove toward M Street. He looked over at Quinn, still intense, sitting straight up in his seat, his knuckles rapping at the window.
Going to split the agent's fee with you on this one, dearie. How's that sound?
How's this sound? You and me work together on that other thing.
Together? You're the subject of my investigation. You forget about that?
I didn't forget.
Look, you got nothing to worry about. The review committee said you were right as rain on that shooting. I got no reason to doubt it.
Right as rain. Yeah, I remember that's exactly what they said. And you couldn't get with me on this anyway. You don't have the license to be doing the kind of work I do. If you're going to stay on it, I want to be involved.
Strange goosed the gas coming out of the turn.
Don't worry. You and me, we're not through.
Derek Strange's mother, Althea Strange, lived in the district convalescent home in Ward 3, a predominantly white and wealthy section of Northwest D.C. The home, a combination hospice and nursing facility, had been operating in the city since the 19th century. After his mother had her stroke back in 96, he had brought her to his house and hired a round-the-clock nurse. But a clot sent her back to the hospital where the surgeons took her right leg. She had gotten around before with a walker, but now she was permanently wheelchair-bound, paralyzed on the right side, and she had previously lost most of her speech and the ability to read and write. Strange went to the edge of the hospice at the end of the long hall and took the elevator up to the third floor. He walked through another hall, painted drab beige, and as he approached the long-term wing where his mother resided, he smelled the mixture of bland food, sickness, and incontinence that he had come to dread. His mother was in her wheelchair, seated at one of the three round tables in a television room where the residents could also take their meals. Next to her was another stroke victim, an Armenian man whose name Strange could never remember, and next to him was a skeletal woman in a kind of reclining wheelchair who never spoke or smiled, just stared up at the ceiling with red-rimmed, hollowed-out eyes. Strange patted the Armenian's shoulder, pulled a chair from the other side of the room, and drew it to his mother's side.
"Mama," said Strange,
kissing her on the cheek and taking her hand, light and fragile as paper. She smiled crookedly at him and slowly blinked her eyes. There was a bead of applesauce hanging on the edge of her lip, and he wiped it clean with the napkin that had fallen into her lap.
"You want a little of this tea right here?"
She pointed with a shaking hand to two sugar packs. Strange ripped the packages open and poured sugar into the plastic cup that held the tea. He stirred it and put the cup in her hand.
"Huh?"
she said, the tea soft as a whisper.
"Yes, ma'am."
"Mama,"
said Strange. "Had a little excitement on the job today."
He told her the story of Sherman Coles and his brother, and of the young ex-police officer who had come along. He made it sound funny and unthreatening because he knew his mother worried about him and what he did for a living. When he was done, his mother smiled in that crooked way she had of smiling now, her lips pulled over toothless gums. Strange smiled back, not looking at the splotchy flesh or the stick arms or the atrophied legs or the flattened breast that ended near her waist, but looking at her eyes. They were deep brown and loving and beautiful, as they had always been. As they had been when he was a child, when Althea Strange had been young and vibrant and strong.
"Room,"
said his mother.
"Okay, Mama."
He wheeled her back to her room, which overlooked the parking lot of a post office. He found her comb in the nightstand and drew it through her sparse white hair. She was nearly bald, and he could see raised moles and other age marks on her scalp.
"You look nice," he said when he was done.
son.
Those eyes of hers looked up at him and she chuckled, her sharp shoulders moving up and down in amusement. Althea Strange pointed to her bedroom window. Strange went to the window and looked out to its ledge. His mother loved birds. She'd always loved to watch them build their nests.
Ain't no birds out there building nests yet, Mama. You won't have to wait for the spring.
Strange kissed his mother goodbye and went toward the elevators, unclenching his jaw and breathing out slow. He began to think, as he tended to do when he left this place, of who he might call tonight. Being here, it always made him want a woman. Old age, sickness, loss, and pain. All of the suffering that was inevitable. You could deny its existence, for a little while anyway, when you were making love. Yeah. When you were lying with a woman, coming deep inside that sucking warmth. You could even deny death.
You want a little more?
Sure.
Terry Quinn reached across the table and poured wine into Juana Burkett's glass. Juana sipped at the Spanish red and sat back in her chair.
It's really good.
I got it at Morris Miller's. The label on the bottle said that it was bold, earthy, and satisfying. Good thing you protected it on your little journey. I was cradling it like a baby on the metro on the way over here.
You really ought to get a car, Terry.
Didn't need one up until recently. My job is close to my house, and I can take the subway down I need to. But I was thinking, maybe I should get one now.
Why now?
Your house is kind of a far walk from the Catholic Youth Station.
You're pretty sure of yourself.
Juana's eyes lit with amusement.
You think I'm going to ask you back?
I don't know. You keep making dinners like this one, I'm not going to wait for an invitation.
I got lucky. Baby artichokes and shrimp over linguine, it just looked so good when I saw the recipe in the post.
Well, it was. Quinn pushed his empty plate aside.
Next time, I take you to dinner.
A little Italian place called Vicino's on Sligo Avenue. They got a red peppers and anchovy dish to make you cry.
That's on your street.
We can walk to it. Stay in the neighborhood until I get my car. Juana went to get coffee and brandy from the kitchen. Quinn got up and walked to the fireplace, where a pressed paper log burned, colored flames rolling in a perfect arc. He picked up a CD case from a stack of them sitting on top of an amp. Luscious Jackson. Chick music. Like all the rock and soul with female vocals she had been playing that night. Juana's group house was nicer than most. Her roommates were grad students, a young married couple named James and Linda. He had met them when he'd arrived, and they were good-looking and nice, and as they had disappeared upstairs almost immediately, considerate as hell. Juana told him that James and Linda had the entire top floor of the house, and she had the finished basement for a quarter of the rent. Juana came out of the kitchen carrying a tray balanced on one hand. She wore a white button-down shirt out over black bells, with black waffled heel stacks on her feet. Black eyeliner framed her night-black eyes. She placed the tray on a small table and went around the room, closing the mini-blinds that hung from the windows.
You want to sit on the couch?
Okay, said Quinn. Quinn pulled the couch close to the fire. They drank black coffee and sipped Napoleon brandy.
I downloaded all the stories they did on you last year off the internet.
Yeah?
Uh-huh. I read everything today.
Juana looked into the fire.
The police force. It sounds like it's a mess.
It's pretty bad.
All those charges of police brutality and the cops. They discharged their weapons more times in this town per capita than in any city in the country.
We got more violent crimes per capita than in any city in the country, too.
And the lack of training. That large group of recruits from back in the late 80s, the paper said that many of those people were totally, just mentally unqualified to be police officers.
A lot of them were unqualified, but not all of them. I was in that group, and I had a degree in criminology.
They shouldn't have hired so many so quick, but they panicked. The feds wanted some kind of response to the crack epidemic, and putting more officers on the street was the easiest solution. But what about the guns they issued the cops? They say those automatics,
the weapons, were fine. You can't put a 5-shot .38 into the hands of a cop these days and tell him to go up against citizens carrying mini Tech 9s and modified full autos. The Glock 17 is a good weapon. I was comfortable with that gun, and I was a good shot. Anyway,
We got a new chief. Things are going to get better on the cop side of things. Wait and see. It's the criminal side that I've got my doubts about.
Moira brushed her hand over Quinn's.
I've never been with someone who did what you did for a living. I guess I'm just trying to figure you out.
That makes two of us. She moved closer to him, her shoulder touching his chest. They didn't say anything for a little while. And then Quinn said,
I met this man today. Old guy. Private investigator. Black guy, used to be a cop long time ago. I can say that he's black, right?
Oh, please.
You're not one of those people claims he doesn't see color, are you?
Well, I'm not blind.
Thank you. I was at a dinner party once. A white girl was describing someone, and her friend said, You mean that black guy? And the white girl said, I don't know. I don't remember what color he was. She was saying it for my benefit, trying to give me the message that she wasn't like that.
I hear you, said Quinn. He rubbed at the edge of his lip.
So, anyway, I met this old black PI today. Yeah? What did he want?
Quinn told her about his day. When he came to the Richard Coles part, he told her that he had kept Coles occupied in the men's room while Strange, the old investigator, made his bust.
You were smiling just then, you know it? When you were telling that story, I mean.
I was.
It made you feel right, didn't it, to be back in it?
Quinn thought of the swing of the hammer and the blood. I guess it did.
You like the action. So why'd you leave the force?
Quinn nodded. You're right. I like being a cop. And I wasn't wrong on that shooting. I'd give anything to have not shot Chris Wilson, to have not taken his life, but I was not wrong. They cleared me, Juana.
Given all the publicity, though, and some of the internal racial stuff, the accusations, I mean, that came out of it, I felt like the only right thing to do at the time was to walk away. Enough of that. I didn't mean to...
It's all right. Juana turned to him and placed the flat of her hand on his chest. Quinn slipped his hand around her side. I guess this is it, said Quinn.
Juana laughed, her eyes black and alive. You're shaking a little bit, you know that?
It's just because you're so fucking beautiful.
Thank you.
Juana brushed Quinn's hair back behind his ear. Well, what are you going to do now?
Keep working at the bookstore, I guess, until I figure things out.
I mean right now.
Kiss you on the mouth?
For an educated guy, you're a little slow to read the signs. Thought it would be polite to ask.
Ask hell, said Juana, moving her mouth towards his. You nearly made me beg.
Entering his row house, Derek Strange listened to a message from Janine, asking him over for a thrown-together dinner with her and her son Lionel. She had made a little too much chicken, she said, and she didn't want all that good food to go to waste. Strange phoned a woman named Shirley, whom he'd dated from time to time, but Shirley was either not at home or not taking calls. Strange fed Greco and walked him around the block. When Strange returned, he checked his portfolio on the net while listening to a reissue of Elmer Bernstein's soundtrack to Return of the Magnificent Seven. He took a shower and changed into a sport jacket over an open-collar shirt. His stomach grumbled, and he phoned Janine.
Baker resident.
Derek here.
Hello.
Got any of that chicken left?
I've been keeping it warm for you, Derek. Can I bring Greco? I got a little something for him, too.
They kissed for a long time, and then Quinn removed his shirt and Juana removed hers. She began to unfasten her black brassiere.
Can I get that? Said Quinn.
Sure. He removed her bra. She let him look at her and touch her. He kissed her shoulder blade and one of her dark nipples, and he kissed the soft flesh of her breast and tasted the salt on her skin.
That's nice, she said.
Quinn got out of his jeans, and when he turned back to her, he saw that she was naked now, too, and they embraced atop the blanket she had thrown on the couch. He kissed her mouth and rubbed himself between her thighs, and she moaned beneath him and laughed softly, and with pleasure as his fingers found her swollen spot. "You know what we're doing now," whispered Quinn. "Celebrating diversity?" "I like it so far. We're all the same, deep down inside." Janine, Lionel, and Strange had dinner together in a small dining room where a portrait of the Last Supper hung on one wall. Janine had given Greco the bone from a chuck roast she had cooked the week before, and the boxer had taken it down to the basement to gnaw alone. "Pass me those mashed potatoes, young man," said Strange. Lionel was tall like his mother, and would be handsome soon, but had not yet fully grown into his large features. He held the bowl out for Strange to take.
"Thank you."
"Where are you going out tonight, Lionel?" asked his mother. "Got a date with this girl."
"What's her name?"
"Girl I know named Sienna."
"How are you going to take a girl out on a date when you got no car?"
"We're going out with Jimmy and his girl. Jimmy got his uncle's Lex, gold style, with some fresh rims."
"Where's Jimmy's uncle get the money for a Lexus?"
asked Janine, her eyes finding Strange's across the table.
"I don't know, but that joint is tight."
He gave Strange a sideways glance and said,
"Of course, it ain't tight like no Caddy, nothing like that."
"You don't like my ride?"
"I like it."
And Lionel smiling and sang,
"Best of all, it's a Cadillac."
Janine and Lionel laugh. Strange laughed a little too.
"He's got a nice voice, doesn't he, Derek?"
"It's all right. Too bad no one sings anymore on the records. Otherwise, he might have a career."
"I'm going to be a big-time lawyer anyway,"
said Lionel, reaching toward the platter of fried chicken and snagging a thigh.
"Not if you don't get your grades up,"
said Janine. "You're over at Coolidge, right?" said Strange.
"Uh-huh. Got another year to go."
Lionel looked at the watch on his gangly wrist.
"I got to bounce. Jimmy will be here any minute to pick me up."
Lionel dropped the thigh bone and took his plate and glass and carried them off to the kitchen.
"See what I put up with?
He's a good boy."
"I do love him."
"I know you do."
Janine patted Strange's hand.
"Thank you for coming over tonight, Derek."
"My pleasure."
10 minutes later, a horn sounded from outside, and they heard Lionel's heavy footsteps coming down the stairs. Strange got up from the table. He walked into the foyer and met Lionel as he was heading for the front door.
"Later, Mr. Derek."
"Hold up a second, Lionel."
Lionel looked himself over. He wore pressed jeans and a Hilfiger shirt with Timberland boots.
"What? You don't like my hookup?"
"You look fine. Listen up, Lionel."
Strange took a breath. He wasn't all that good at this, but he knew he had to try. "Don't be driving around smoking herb in a fancy ride, yeah?"
"Herb?"
Lionel said in a mocking way, and Strange felt his face grow hot.
"All I'm telling you is, the police see a car with young black men inside it, especially a gold Lexus with fancy wheels, look like a drug car. They don't think they need a reason to pull you over. They find Blunt or Chiva, whatever you calling it these days, inside the car. You got a mark on your record you can't shake. You might as well go ahead and forget about law school then."
"I hear you, Mr. Derek."
"All right."
Strange reached into his back pocket and pulled a 20 from the billfold.
"Here you go. You don't want to be taking out a nice girl without a little extra money in your pocket."
"Thank you, Mr. Derek."
The horn sounded again from out in the street.
"I'm a ghost."
Lionel left, and Strange walked back into the living room. Janine was waiting for him there. She had put Songs in the Key of Life on the stereo and had brought out a cold bottle of Heineken and 2 glasses and set them on the table before the couch. Janine was sitting on the couch with her stocking feet up on the table.
"You and Lionel have a little man-to-man?"
"Yeah."
"There's so much I can't give him alone. He needs a strong male figure to guide him now and then."
Strange smiled and flexed his bicep.
"You think I'm strong?"
"Go ahead, Derek."
"I don't feel too strong tonight, I can tell you that."
"That Sherman Coles pickup do you in?"
"Good thing I had that young man with me."
Janine put a pillow behind Strange's head. They talked about work. He told her the Coles story, and she told him how she'd taken care of some loose ends at the office. When they were done talking and the beer bottle had been emptied,
They went upstairs to Janine's room. She had turned the sheets down, and he knew she had done it for him. Her clock radio, always set to HUR, had been turned on and was softly emitting some quiet storm. The room was strong with the smell of her perfume. He got out of his clothes and stripped himself of his underwear. They were naked, and they kissed standing. He got his hand on her behind and caressed her firm, ample flesh.
Damn, Janine.
What?
You got some back on you, girl.
You don't like it?
You know I do.
He pushed her large breasts together and kissed them, then kissed her mouth. Sit your ass down, said Janine.
Here?
Asked Strange, pointing to the edge of the bed.
You said you were tired. Let me do the work tonight. Who's this right here?
Said Quinn.
Lauryn Hill? You like it?
Yeah, it's pretty nice. They were still on the couch. Quinn pulled an afghan up over them. The fire had weakened and a chill had come into the room. He looked at his white skin atop her brown.
Think we can make this work?
Asked Quinn.
Do you want it to?
Yes. Strange was under the covers lying beside Janine when Greco walked into the room. He dropped the chuck bone at the foot of the bed, then moved it between his paws as he got himself down on the carpet.
He's telling me it's time to go home.
I wish you didn't have to. It's nice and warm under this blanket.
It wouldn't be proper to have Lionel come home and know that I was here.
He already knows, Derek.
It wouldn't be right just the same.
Janine got up on one elbow and ran her fingers through the short hairs on Strange's chest.
Give that lawyer Markowitz, the one I do business with from time to time, a call tomorrow. See if he can't get us the transcripts of the review board hearings on the Quinn case.
What's your feelings on this Quinn?
I don't know enough about him yet. Next thing I'm going to do, I'm going to go read those transcripts. Then I'm going to go out and try and talk to the other players.
You think Quinn was wrong?
I think he's a white man who saw a black man holding a gun on another white man in the street. He reacted the way he's been programmed to react in this society, going back to birth.
You say he's that way?
He's like most white people. Don't you know most of them will tell you they don't have a racist bone in their bodies?
They're pure of mind and heart.
But Quinn doesn't think he's that way, said Strange. But he is.
Nestor Rodriguez looked in the rearview mirror and spotted the green Ford, 10 car lengths back. He punched the number into the cell phone cradled beside him, then snatched the phone up as it began to ring on the other end.
Lizardo!
Better.
We're almost there. I just now called Boone and told him to pick us up.
We got to do this every time for the Miji?
The Jacob doesn't want us to know where he and his father live. He insists. Why can't we just make the trade in the parking lot? Because the little one likes to scale out the Menteke and test it at his house, in front of us. He's afraid of being ripped off.
Shit, said Lizardo.
Nestor was traveling north on 270 in a blue Ford Contour. Lizardo Rodriguez followed in a green version of the same car. There were 5 kilograms of Colombian brown heroin in the trunk of Nestor's Ford and 5 in the trunk of Lizardo's.
Who were you talking to a few minutes ago?
Said Nestor.
My woman. Her father doesn't want to change these crops. I tried to explain to him the cartel will provide the fertilizer and the seeds, and I guarantee that what he reaps we will sell. The papi will give him 2 crops a year, twice what he'll get from his single crop of coffee beans, and will pay his field workers 4 times what they earn to harvest the crop.
What's the problem?
He is a peasant.
He sees the American helicopters and he's afraid.
He sees me, his own son-in-law, and he is afraid.
He sees his own shadow brother, and he's afraid.
Farmers, said Nestor with contempt.
I'm only trying to help him, to get my woman off my back so that maybe, then, she can get on her back for a change.
Nestor understood why Lizardo's woman did not care to sleep with him. Lizardo was often drunk, and when he was drunk, he was not a gentleman in bed. When he was so drunk that he couldn't be a man, he hit her with his fist. Nestor checked his face in the rear view. His black hair was combed back and set in place with gel, and he wore a neat Van Dyke beard.
He had shaved the hair that had been between his eyebrows his entire life, so that now he had two separate eyebrows. His clothing was neat, but not flashy. Nestor studied the pictures in the Esquire and GQ magazine so that he could see the latest styles and the proper way to dress. A mile down the interstate stood a strip shopping center bordering a field where houses were being constructed. The parking lot was half-filled. Nestor found a row of cars with two empty spaces. He pulled into a space and watched his brother pull into the other, situated at the very end of the row. Nestor reached beneath the seat and picked up his gun, a SIG SR-9, that held an 8-shot magazine. He slid the SIG into a leather holster inside his jacket.
"You Dr. Coleman?"
said Lizardo, still holding the phone.
"Not since the last time. I got him from Baltimore tonight."
"Will he take the cocaine on the next run?"
"He says that he buys his cocaine from a supplier in Los Angeles and that he doesn't want to change. But I told him, if he wants Armenteca, he'll have to take the cocaine. I told him that we can no longer sell one without the other."
"What if he refuses?"
"We'll have the boon sell Armenteca to someone else."
Lizardo reached across the seat, dropped the glove box door, and removed his Davis 32. It was a small gun, good at close range, and it fit neatly into the pocket of his pleated black slacks.
"Listen," said Lizardo, "we'll go back to selling Coleman direct. It'll be cheaper for him, right? Maybe that will convince him to take the coke as well." "You forget. Why we got the Boons involved to begin with?"
"We didn't. Our cousin Roberto did. When he and the little one were together in the joint.
We asked Roberto to find a mule for us, remember?"
"Oh, yeah."
Nestor exhaled a long breath. He had to remember to be patient with his brother, whose brain worked very slowly.
"Lizardo, you want me to go into that lousy city, deal with the niggas directly?"
"No."
"Then we need bones.
So leave little Ray alone, understand? You're always trying to get him excited."
"Fuck," said Lizardo.